This podcast may contain adult language and situations, graphic, gory details, and other not so nice things. Listener discretion is advised. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Lacey, and this is United States of Murder. This week, we're in Missouri discussing a case of hazing.
Then we'll talk about a divorce that turns lethal. So buckle up and join us on this dark and twisted ride through the Show Me State.
The case I'm going to cover is a type we've actually never done before.
I was thinking when you told me what it was about, and I cannot think of one single case, which is crazy because I feel like we see these cases in the news.
Yeah. So Danny Santulli graduated high school in the spring of 2021 in suburban Minneapolis, Minnesota, with dreams of going to college. He chose the University of Missouri because his older brother and sister were enrolled there and he wanted to be by family. The University of Missouri, which is located in Columbia, is commonly referred to as Mizzou, and it's Missouri's largest university. I know people that have graduated from Mizzou.
I do too.
Danny planned to follow in his brother Nick's footsteps and enroll in business school. Like so many kids entering college, Danny wanted to be a part of Greek life. So he pledged Phi Gamma Delta. So Mizzou has 31 fraternities.
Holy shit.
And 21 sororities. That's a pretty big Greek life.
Yeah.
I went to a smaller school, so I don't really know what to compare it by, but that seems like 31 to choose from. So what Danny did not realize at the time was that Phi Gamma Delta was on double probation. On May 4th, 2021, they were put on probation for the first time when they were in violation of university policies and alcohol distribution, and they had to attend alcohol education programs. Then they were put on probation for a second time, October 6th, 2021, for similar stuff.
So underage drinking.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Partying, supplying to minors, yada, yada. And when you're on probation, alcohol is prohibited at the fraternity house.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
Yeah. So some schools, probably not very many in other states, are dry campuses and fraternities can't even have alcohol. This is not one of those campuses. Alcohol is allowed. You're allowed to drink at your fraternity house. Technically speaking, if you're underage, you're not supposed to drink, but I'm sure that happens at every single fraternity.
It happens in every single college.
Yeah, even the ones that don't drink, sorry to burst any bubbles out there.
You're going to drink.
Yeah. So at the age of 18, Danny was struggling through the recruitment process for his fraternity. He had been in the hospital earlier in the process after an older member instructed him to climb inside a trash can full of broken glass.
Oh my God. No.
And that's just the beginning.
And that put him in the hospital.
That put him in the hospital, yeah.
Ugh.
He was like super
severely
cut up.
Cut.
Yeah. His sister Meredith, who attended that same school, tried to console him. And his parents told him that he did not have to stay in the fraternity.
No.
They were trying to convince him maybe you should quit, but he said he couldn't quit and suffer the humiliation. 2 days later, on October 19th, it was the father-son reveal night during Pledge Week. I had to look this up. Basically, it's kind of like Big Brother. A new member is assigned to an existing older member as sort of a mentor-mentee situation. On this night, Danny was among the 40-some freshman pledges who were marched shirtless and blindfolded into the basement of the Phi Gamma Delta frat house. The pledges also received bottles of hard liquor and instructions to finish them.
Oh, God.
This is a pretty common thing in hazing. Danny had a fifth of Tito's vodka duct taped to his hand. They did this to pressure him into drinking the whole thing. I've heard of this stuff happening before.
Where have I been? Am I just too old for this? Because I don't
like the taping 40s on both hands and that kind of thing. But there's surveillance footage that depicts what happens next. I did not watch it because
I can't.
I saw pictures of it, so I kind of get the gist and I read about it, but I didn't want to watch it. Danny stood in the middle of a crowded room where someone was pouring beer into a funnel that was connected to a tube pouring into Danny's mouth, aka a beer bong. Danny specifically said he wanted to stop, and they said no, and they were making fun of him.
I would throw up.
I can't believe he didn't throw up. That would have helped. People that throw up when they drink don't know how that's a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Unless you're knocked out on your back, of course.
Right.
So he kept drinking. At this point, it was pretty obvious he was heavily intoxicated as he stumbled backward and fell to the floor. So it's beer all night, beer bongs, which is a ton of beer at once, fifth of Tito's vodka. It's a lot of stuff.
Ugh.
So he stumbled backward, fell to the floor. So then the frat guys moved Danny to a couch where he eventually slumps off of it into the floor. So it's all these people, and he's just on the floor. Later, someone carried him out of the frat house. They dropped him, and his head hit the hard tiled floor.
Oh my God.
He was completely out of it at this point. Like, totally.
I remember in college drinking shot for shot with this guy at a party.
Oh, man.
And at one point, they had lined up, I don't know, maybe 8 shots of tequila. And we were taking them shot for shot. And I did every one of them.
Oh, my God.
And then we switched to, like, Evan Williams and did shot for shot. I remember feeling super dizzy. I'm going to pass out.
Mm-hmm.
And laying on the kitchen floor and lights out.
Wow.
And woke up the next day not knowing where I was, not knowing what mm-hmm. happened, super hungover. So, I mean, like you're saying, mm-hmm. he just passes out.
Yeah,
100%. Like when you drink that much, mm-hmm. and here's the thing, when you're a teenager, essentially a young adult, you're not 21.
Right.
You do fall into that peer pressure where you're
sure.
like, I can do this. I don't need to quit. Especially if they're talking shit.
And it was like, there were just 40 freshmen, and it was all the upper, you can see if you watch the video, I just watched it. Yeah, the mm-hmm. upperclassmen. Basically, like, you know, if you can't drink it all, you're a pussy and all
right.
this. I mean, they're basically just ridiculing him. Like, come on, if you can't drink, you can't stay in this house. And it was very much so just
so much
pressure.
Well, and I am and have always been this person and actually prided myself in this my whole teenage, high school, college. I don't do peer pressure. I don't give a shit if mm-hmm. you make fun of me. I don't care. But in that moment when I was drinking with this other guy, mm-hmm. it was the same thing where it was like, oh, you're a girl, you can't do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, whatever. I can drink as much as you can. And I did, but then I...
Well, then it's like your inhibitions go out after a few drinks.
Right.
And you don't realize how drunk you are.
Exactly.
So you just keep drinking.
So you just keep drinking.
You just don't even realize it until, boom, you're on the floor.
And you don't remember anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very
this
slippery...
This happens a lot.
Yeah. It's the slippery, slippery, dangerous...
Oh, yeah.
...slope.
For sure.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know his exact height, but he's a small guy. He's thin, 18 years old. So later that night, Danny's parents woke to a phone call from a university hospital emergency room. The ER nurse told them that Danny was in critical condition and that they should make the 7.5-hour drive from Eden Prairie, Minnesota, to be with their son.
Oh, my God.
Danny stopped breathing and went into cardiac arrest. The fraternity brothers neglected to call 911 and get him proper, immediate medical attention. So who knows how long he wasn't breathing.
We've all taken care of our drunk friends.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not saying anything towards a fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been many times you have met my sister, and I love you, and she listens. I know she's listening now. Many times I've taken care of her. She drinks like a sailor, mm-hmm. where she has passed out. I have put her to bed.
Right.
And went on about my night,
mm-hmm.
checked in, peeped in on her to make sure she wasn't covered in mm-hmm. vomit or whatever, but never went and, like, checked her breathing, made sure. Am I a shitty sister? I feel like we've done that with friends. I know for a fact I've done it with friends and also have been that friend that you drink too much and you pass out to continually go check yeah. on someone. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So did someone go and obviously no. someone checked on him? How would he get to the hospital?
Eventually. But up until that point, remember they moved him out of the house. So it was kind of like parties ending. They were leaving. I don't know who helped him out, but it was
once they helped him out, that's when they realized.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, who knows how long he had been slumped over, just already passed out. And remember, they drop him, hit his head on a tile floor. So he's dealing with that too. But yeah, no one was checking on him. There was no designated person, which honestly, if you're having something like that, I don't condone what they did at all. But if there's a drinking situation like that, there needs to be a sober person there or something. You know what I mean?
Like somebody
an upperclassman or someone to just check on people.
When you're drinking that heavily continuously.
Like obviously, hindsight, they would – I don't know. But someone needs to check on people. Yeah, he had friends pledging too, but they're – getting drunk too. I mean, you know, it's the same thing for them. So these upperclassmen are not his friends and they're just bullying him, you know, basically. So they didn't call 911 immediately. And when they realized he wasn't breathing, they called the police. And police arrived to the frat house in the early hours on Wednesday morning based on a report of, quote, a freshman who was unresponsive. He was pale and his lips were blue, and he was still not breathing when the cops got there.
Mm-mm.
Danny was transported to the university hospital due to alcohol poisoning concerns. That's what they thought had happened at the time, which did happen, but he had a blood alcohol level of 0.468. So if you don't know much about that, which I don't really, that's 6 times the legal limit. A ton. Like, shocking. It's a shocking amount. I can't believe he wasn't covered in his own vomit. I don't know why. It's
Girl, if I have a if I have a fruity drink, I'm going to throw up.
Could you imagine straight vodka? It makes me sick.
And beer.
Yeah, that's in that combination. The hospital staff resuscitated Danny with CPR, but they had to place him on a ventilator because, like I said, God only knows how much time has passed where he has been not breathing. So essentially, the high alcohol consumption that led to the cardiac arrest broke his brain, for lack of a better way to put it. He survived, but can no longer see because of the damage to his occipital cortex. He's also unable to walk and talk because of the damage. And he is in the care of his parents because he needs around-the-clock care. I'm going to post a photo when we like we normally do. And when I tell you, this picture made me cry, what he looks like now. He's wearing sunglasses, obviously, because they're not going to take a picture of that. But he has to have his arms kind of like taped to the wheelchair. I'm not sure why, but it's like to keep him in place. It's just so sad.
Did anything from the drop, did he have like a TBI or anything, like a traumatic brain injury?
I did not read that he had a TBI.
I wonder if there was like bleeding on the brain or something caused from that in correlation to
all the
alcohol.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Just, it couldn't have helped.
No.
It couldn't have helped, that's for sure. So, according to the Columbia, Missourian, every morning at 4:30 a.m., Danny's mom, Pat, wakes up to prepare his food. She pours it into a bag that will be pumped into him through a tube. He cries, but he cannot articulate why he cries. They think maybe he cries because he understands what's happening, but no one knows for sure.
That's the saddest thing ever.
It broke my heart, so he cannot even speak a word, can't really make noises or anything, but tears roll down his face. Like, not in a sobbing way, but just And they say it's commonly at the same time every day. Ugh. It's heartbreaking. After this, the University of Missouri and its Interfraternity Council temporarily suspended all frat activities, including social and university-sanctioned events. Mizzou Police and the Office of Student Accountability and Support investigated to determine if any criminal statutes or university regulations were violated. Based on an initial investigation, several members of the fraternity are believed to have consumed significant amounts of alcohol during a party at the fraternity. Well, yeah, it's pledge week and they're being hazed, of course. Since 2017, Phi Gamma Delta had 6 documented violations of alcohol distribution policies and 2 hazing violations. And these are on the record. So they're basically getting slapped on the wrist and continuing. So finally, after this situation, they decided to remove the Phi Gamma Delta chapter as a recognized student organization. Then, in 2022, Danny's parents filed a lawsuit against the Phi Gamma Delta organization, and the family from Eden Prairie is represented by David Bianchi, an attorney from Miami who specializes in hazing litigation. David said Danny's is the worst injury he's ever seen with any hazing victim in his 30 years of practicing. And these are not isolated one-off events, he said. These are a pattern of unsafe and dangerous behavior that represents traditions of the fraternity. A similar situation in which a pledge member is presented with a, quote, family bottle of hard alcohol to consume occurred in 2017 and resulted in the death of Andrew Coffey, a Florida State University student. I slightly remember that case. And that incident led to jail time for the frat members. And a settlement between Coffey's family and the Pi Kappa Phi fraternity and an anti-hazing law passed in Florida. In this case, the National Phi Gamma Delta Organization is a defendant in the suit, along with the entire MU's chapter executive board, which does include current students. 11 of the guys who were present on the night of the hazing have been charged with crimes ranging from giving alcohol to a minor to evidence tampering, that didn't elaborate, to felony hazing, and they could face jail time. The Santolis settled with 25 defendants in a civil case, including fraternity brothers and the fraternity organization. The 8 brothers that were indicted were charged with Class D felonies of hazing and are set to be back in court for their arraignment hearings. I didn't see any updates posted yet about that. And in the court messages, the guys in the fraternity blamed Danny's injuries on himself. They downplayed the amount of knowledge and control that they had in such events at local chapters. Like the fraternity itself, they're kind of like, well, we don't know what goes on in each one. They argued that he consumed an unreasonably dangerous quantity of alcohol voluntarily and failed to seek assistance. Okay, he was blackout drunk. Mm-hmm. How could he seek assistance?
Right.
It's not the same thing, but it almost reminds me of if a woman is drunk and gets sexually assaulted or raped.
She should have knew better.
Yeah, it's that kind of like, well, they shouldn't have drank.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a very specific situation where he's...
Right.
He's not being forced physically, but he almost is being forced in a sense. It's not like, we didn't have anything to do with it. We were not involved.
You're
he drank
it. You're pressuring the fuck out
of
him, though.
It's not a normal situation at all.
And not everybody is so strong-minded.
Oh, not... Yeah, for
at
sure.
All. I have a child who is a follower, and it drives me insane. And when I hear stories like this, I'm like, it just makes me nauseated. I'm not saying that, you know,
anyone to fall into a trap like this. Yeah.
You want to be popular, the new kid in school. Mm-hmm. You want to be a part of something greater and bigger. You see everyone around you doing it. All of your friends that are also pledging are doing the same thing.
Yeah.
You don't think you're going to be different.
And you don't think I could die or get seriously injured from this. That's not even – ugh. So MU disciplined 13 students for their roles in the incident, but they refused to specify how many were suspended and/or expelled. Danny's parents sometimes appear at the closed-door appeal hearings given to those punished, and at one of them, the defendant, who hasn't been criminally charged, was allowed to address the family. So this was one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
He said he cared for Danny, and Danny's dad, Tom, said, "I felt it and heard it in his voice. It meant the world to me. It shows that there's some remorse."
I don't think that any of the boys in their fraternity did this maliciously.
Right.
I think that they're just a part of a bigger—
It's a culture.
It's a culture, mm-hmm. the big Greek culture, and it was done to them. They're passing
yes,
it on.
Exactly.
They're doing it to somebody else.
The tradition
else.
Is a big element
yes.
of it, yeah.
They don't think that something—
Like, oh, come on, I did it.
Nefarious is
you
going
can
to
do
happen.
It too.
Right.
Yeah.
Or six other people have already done this. You can do it. There's nothing mm-hmm. going to happen to you. Look, but everybody's so different. That's like drugs.
Yeah.
I can't predict how someone's going to do a drug and be fine, and you do it and you OD.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So it's just—
Weight matters.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, everything matters. And Tom really just wants ownership and accountability for what happened to Danny.
Yeah.
It meant a lot to him that mm-hmm. that one guy mm-hmm. said, "Danny meant a lot to me." Mm-hmm. And the other guys are kind of like, well, he did it. He drank that
well,
much.
Well, and who knows what their attorneys are telling them.
Oh, yeah.
Their attorneys may be saying,
"Don't
admit no
guilt.
Fault."
Yeah.
yeah.
And that sucks because it's like sometimes that's what one a parent wants to hear is,
sure.
"We screwed up. We love Danny. We're sorry.
He was one of our brothers. We were just doing this to him like we were everybody mm-hmm. else." And it's awful.
Tom said, "Let me be clear. I don't want to get rid of fraternities. I still think you can have fun. My advice, find out who the officers of the fraternity are and what are their credentials." He essentially wants people to learn from this major mistake. Tom and Mary Pat talk to Danny all the time. They know he's listening. Tom said that he'll hear something and you can tell he's thinking about it. He and Danny listen to New York Yankees and New York Giants games together. Danny loves Post Malone, so Tom listens to his music with him. Mary Pat likes to play soothing music and soundscapes for Danny. Their main job around the clock, like she had to quit her regular mm-hmm. job to be his caretaker, their main job is to keep him out of the hospital. This means keeping his throat clear of mucus, which gets trapped on his tonsils and leads to vomiting. And the throwing up leads to fluid in his lungs, which leads to hospitalization. It's just so bad. A doctor in New Orleans who has pioneered hyperbaric oxygen therapy looked at Danny's brain scans and thinks he might be able to help him regain some brain function. There's no guarantees, of course, but the family wants to be optimistic and they're, of course, willing to take a chance. They now want to raise awareness about hazing to prevent other families from going through the same tragedy.
Oh, man.
So now I have some not-so-fun statistics. There has been at least one university hazing death each year from 1969 to 2021, with 40 deaths between 2007 and 2017 alone. In 2021, NBC reported that since the year 2000, at least 50 college students have died from hazing, with the majority of those being related to alcohol. And according to independent researcher Hank Neuer, the toll could be even as high as 105.
Mm.
An exact list is not available because there's no central system for tracking hazing deaths. And the role of hazing in some deaths is subject to disagreement
mm-hmm.
because it involves alcohol typically. And hazing goes unreported a lot of the time, so many cases are left undocumented. California has the highest reporting hazing-related deaths, giving its large size and amount of colleges within the state. New York and Texas are not far behind, and tradition can be toxic to the cycle of hazing and perpetuate it even more. So New York has a lot of older colleges, of course, so that might be the reasoning behind their number. A 2008 national study of student hazing concluded that over half of college students in clubs, teams, and organizations experienced some form of hazing. And in the same study, 95% of the cases were unreported. 73% of sorority and fraternity members experienced hazing, and 3 in 4 varsity student athletes experienced hazing. And it doesn't just happen with men. In January 2023, the Harvard women's hockey program, I didn't hear about this, just last year, including their coach, Katie Stone, was brought under scrutiny for hazing allegations, including a naked skate tradition, whatever that means, an initiation week where first-year students were pressured to consume alcohol and simulate sex acts.
What?
And this, a coach is involved. Yes. Research suggests that women are likely to engage in hazing for conformity and for identity, and men are more likely to participate to prove masculinity. But overall, the theme is that they want group affiliation and a sense of belonging. On July 10th, 2023, Northwestern head football coach Pat Fitzgerald was fired after an investigation found that his players had participated in hazing rituals. According to news, the hazing included sexual abuse, from forced nudity to coerced sexual acts in the locker room. It sounds like, I can only speculate, but based on what I read, making other freshmen do sex acts to each other.
Oh my God.
It's insane. And this is, these two cases are from last year, and I had never heard of them at all.
No.
Oh my God, I have chills. Megan B. emailed about this case. She shared it because she says it needs more attention to help future instances from happening. I agree. She was a junior at Mizzou when this happened.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And
I never heard of this.
I haven't either. And I almost never want to cover a hazing case again because it's so
gross.
I'm like,
oh, this is why we haven't covered these.
Yeah, it involves alcohol and sexual acts typically.
And essentially children. I mean, yeah. Not children. You know what I mean? They're not
18. That's just, and he looks like a baby.
He's somebody's child. That's
And he just looks like a happy young guy going to college with his brother and sister there. Just awful. Ugh, I need a break after that.
All right, here we go. On June 1st, 2011, Jackie Waller calls her big sister Cheryl to let her know she's going to pick up one of her triplets from her estranged husband, Clay.
Wow.
The two had split up, and it wasn't going well at first, but kind of had tapered off, and they were getting along. When Jackie hadn't called her sister back by 7 that night, Cheryl drives straight to the police station. She walks in, tells the police that Clay Waller had killed her sister. Awfully bold statement. There was no reason for her to think that she was dead, according to the police. And she had just called her sister a few hours before, so maybe she had got busy, or the police just weren't quick to jump on, oh my God, let's go out there and arrest her.
Wow. Okay.
But Cheryl knew something bad had happened. Jackie and Clay had met when they were both around 30 years old. She was very sweet and caring, and she had a soft spot for Clay. He had a speech impediment, and people often made fun of him for it, but not Jackie. From the very beginning, she took care of him. She loved him. She was very nurturing. She loved everybody. She was a very sweet woman, but she especially loved Clay. He was a red flag from from the very beginning. But Jackie didn't care. The two get married, buy a small house. They talked about wanting a big family. Jackie had a very successful career in insurance, like health insurance. Mm-hmm. Clay kind of fluttered from job to job, didn't hold down anything for too long. So Jackie supported both of them, essentially. Having children was difficult, and eventually Jackie did get pregnant through in vitro, and they found out they were expecting triplets, 2 girls and a boy.
I cannot even imagine that. Woof.
Clay had no interest in helping with the kids, with the babies. Jackie did it all. He wouldn't even play with them.
How could she do that by herself?
She did. and worked.
I
40 hours at her job and was essentially the mom and the dad to the triplets.
Oh, my God.
Her mom and sister did help out when they could so she could get a break or have some rest. Clay eventually took a job at the sheriff's office but was fired. He had no interest in working whatsoever.
Ugh.
Jackie took a management position at her insurance office, so this kind of solidified it for Clay that he never had to work.
Wow. So was he a stay-at-home dad, or was he home and the kids were not home? You know what I'm saying?
Like, he was just
other people tending to the children?
Yes. He was just a stay-at-home man, husband.
That's what kills me is I hear about that sometimes, where it's like, it's great if you're a stay-at-home husband, but are you staying at home and you're sending your kids to their grandma's?
Or daycare.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Clay did not appreciate Jackie. He insulted her every day.
Oh, my gosh.
He made sure she felt small and invisible. He had multiple affairs. He made her life hell. He would tell her regularly that she was worthless and no one would ever want her. And her family tried to talk her into divorcing him over and over again. And eventually, you know, it took a few years, but she finally decided to get out. With the bills piling up, her being the only one bringing in money, their house was foreclosed on, and she took this opportunity to take the kids, leave, move in with her sister Cheryl, and file for divorce. Clay moved in with one of his friends, and he began to threaten his wife, saying if she went through with it, she was signing a death warrant for her life and the lives of their children.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. She was scared, understandably, but she wasn't backing down. She wanted a better life for herself. And at this point, her kids were five.
Mm.
So she started keeping a diary of everything he had done or said to her. He starts stalking her. The divorce was almost finalized, and things had started to die down between the two of them. He was allowed to see the kids at this point, and they seemed to be getting along. He was seeing another woman. She was seeing another man. So on June 1st, the couple met at the attorney's office in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And then after they signed their final paperwork, he took their son and was going to spend some time with him for the afternoon. The girls had stayed with their aunt. So Jackie was supposed to pick up their son that evening, and when she headed over there around 4, she called her sister, chit-chats with her on the way. This was the last conversation anyone would have with Jackie.
Mm.
By 7, when she hadn't heard from her sister, that's when Cheryl texts Clay and says, if I don't hear from my sister in 5 minutes, I'm going to the police department. Because she knows. Your sister or your best girlfriend, if you don't have a sister, they know everything.
Yeah.
If you think that somebody doesn't know, sometimes they don't. There are those cases where someone keeps it all in. But Jackie's sister, Cheryl, knew everything. She went through this with her. She knew how he was acting. So she knew something was up. So Clay calls Cheryl and basically says, I don't know what you're talking about. She knows he's lying. So she takes the kids to her parents and then drives to the police station. The police immediately call Clay while Cheryl's there. And he says they did go back to the house, to his house, after they'd met at the attorney's office. During the questioning, Clay says she came to the house around 4. We chatted. I left to go to the store, and when I got back, she was gone. He said their son was in Illinois with his new girlfriend, and Jackie was aware of this and wasn't worried. But Cheryl's like, no, Jackie told me she's going to pick him up, and that's it. Not that they're going to discuss anything or talk about anything. And she would never allow a new girlfriend to not only take her son, but take him across the state line.
That's odd.
Super odd.
She did it without him without Clay. Why would the girlfriend do that? That's just...
It makes no sense. And I'll tell you this much. I don't know how other people's divorces or whatnot go, but Max's dad and I have been apart for almost 7 years now. He better never fucking ever let Max go with a new girlfriend anywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Period. We have very strict rules on that.
Especially out of state.
Yes. Yes. So a search starts for the missing mom and her vehicle. And just a few hours later, her Honda Pilot is found on Interstate 55 with a flat tire.
Hmm.
The tire had been punctured.
Oh, gosh.
There were a few bloodstains on the back seat, and she was nowhere to be found. Her purse, keys, and cell phone were not found inside the vehicle. Dogs are brought in, police, search parties on foot, and a $4,000 reward is set up, but nothing. Her Blue Cross Blue Shield business cards were later found inside a packet along Missouri's Route 177, which was about 10 miles from where her car was found. So investigators go to Clay's house to question him again, and he tells them the same story, but refuses to let them look in his house or his vehicle. At this point, he has hired an attorney. So 4 days go by, and Clay leaves Jackie a voicemail telling her he loves her and misses her, and to please call him.
Oh, yeah, right.
So cops get a search warrant, come back, search his place, find small blood stains in his truck. They take samples, send them for testing. It's fish blood.
What?
Yeah. He did that on purpose.
Oh.
He put fish blood all over the inside of his truck. Yeah. To like, I don't know if he was trying to throw police off or send him on some kind of wild goose
like
chase.
Like a red herring type of thing.
Yes. There is no carpet in his house. The flooring had been cut out, and they do find tiny blood drops on the walls. The basement had missing furniture, and bloody carpet was found stuffed under a floorboard.
Ugh.
CCTV footage show both Jackie and Clay at a pharmacy around 11 a.m. They look normal. She's seen at an ATM around 1, and then she's not seen again. Clay is seen with his girlfriend and son around 5 o'clock that night at a toy store, then at a car wash where he is washing out his boat, and you can see there is a trash can in the boat with something in it. And he's in different clothes than he was before. So photos are released of Clay, his truck, and boat to the media. Kind of like, if you've seen him or seen this boat anywhere or this truck, please call us. Mm-hmm. They're trying to establish a timeline, figure out if anyone had seen them. One couple said they did see the boat near Devil's Island on the Mississippi River. This was confirmed by cell phone pings of his hitting off towers close to the area. But when it's searched, they find nothing. So once the blood stains come back from, you know, the little droplets on the wall, they match Jackie. They bring Clay in. He claims they are old bloodstains. So they have to release him. There's nothing to hold him on. It's all speculation. Wow. There's no body. There's no murder weapon. There's nothing. He starts taunting the police.
What?
He would also drive by the search parties and yell profanities out his window, flip them off. He would yell at them that they are wasting their fucking time and they weren't going to find her.
Wow, way to make yourself a spectacle. Like, what are you thinking?
In the meantime, Jackie's sister takes him to court to get full custody of the triplets.
God, I was wondering.
Which she got because it is very well known that he's acting like an asshole.
I was scared they weren't going to be safe.
No. Okay, yes. So she gets them. He's acting like a crazy person. Everyone's seen it. So he is pissed that he loses his kids.
Yeah.
He starts making threats against Cheryl. He even posted these threats on social media. So police arrest him for threat of life. He says he's just pissed and acting out, but it, you know, that he didn't mean it. Detectives ask him about his ex-wife. He denies anything to do with it. He blames her new boyfriend for her disappearance, but he has a rock-solid alibi. Everything's pointing to Clay.
Mm-hmm.
He gets sentenced to 5 years in prison for the threats against Cheryl.
Wow, that shocks me. I mean, that's awesome, but that shocks me.
Cops are still investigating. They're still searching Devil's Island for Jackie's body or anything at this point that could tie him to her murder. They find nothing.
It's attached to the Mississippi River?
It's an island in the middle of the Mississippi River.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's going to be
so
hard to find if they do find it. Wow.
2 years go by. Circumstantial evidence and videotapes that they have are enough, and they decide to charge him with Jackie's murder, even though there's no body.
Mm-hmm.
So under the advice of his attorney, Clay makes a deal. A plea deal that includes agreeing to killing her and showing the authorities where her body is buried. Then the charge would be reduced to second-degree murder. So he tells them, it's on the Illinois side of the Mississippi River on a sandbar. The area is only accessible by boat. They go there and they find her. They dig her up, and she's identified by her dental records. And her funeral was held on her parents' 50th wedding anniversary. Clay confessed in court that he had thought of killing her a year before when she had first brought up divorce. He said after they met to finalize everything that final day in the attorney's office, she suggested they go back to his house and have sex one more time. He said they were talking in the kitchen and they got into it, and he hit her and strangled her.
Mm.
According to her autopsy report, she had multiple blunt force trauma, so this wasn't just a single punch.
Man.
But there's more. Since she was killed in Missouri and buried in Illinois, the case fell under the federal law against domestic violence across state lines. And he had violated it, so there was an additional 35 years added to the 20 years that he got for Jackie's murder. So 20 years is the maximum penalty allowed by law for second-degree murder. But he wasn't finished yet. In the spring of 2013, Clay wound up sharing a cell block with Cedric Dean. Dean was serving over a federal drug trafficking charge. And Waller told him that he had a book deal with several hundred thousands of dollars coming to him. He just needed somebody to help him write the manuscript.
Oh my gosh.
So, according to Cedric Dean, Clay promised to give him $10,000 to go towards the, you know, his foundation that he had set up, the Cedric Dean had set up. But he'd use the book's proceeds to establish a trust fund for his kids. So they work on this book titled, If You Take My Kids, I'll Kill You.
Are you joking?
The public confession of Missouri's most notorious wife killer.
He called himself
the
most notorious.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. Yes. During that time, Cedric Dean had realized that Clay was manipulating him and was not sorry about his wife's murder.
Ugh.
So when the book was completed, Cedric smuggled the manuscript out of prison and gave it to a fellow inmate's mother.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Eventually, both men were transferred to separate penitentiaries, and Clay was relocated to a Florida prison, but in December of 2015, he was transferred back to Missouri and is in a maximum security state prison in Fulton. In May of 2016, investigators in Illinois and Missouri became aware of Cedric's manuscript and tracked him down in a prison in Ohio. So even the inmates in the prison they were originally at told them, we know about this book. We know. I don't know where the book is now. It's obviously not been published, but
wow.
This case makes no sense to me. You don't want her. You've treated her like shit. You don't want your kids. So why kill her?
just so he can not work, I guess.
Now those three kids they have no parents.
That's so sad.
No parents. Victim impact statements were given, and the son made one. 3x5 of it basically said he hated him.
Wow.
And he was a big fat meanie. Because they're like
they're little kids.
6, 7 years old. Yeah. They don't have anything to do with their father. They're being raised by their Aunt Cheryl. Yeah. It's got to be so heartbreaking, not only for Jackie's family, but her three kids to know that your mother wanted you so badly and loved you so much. And now she's just gone.
That's so sad.
For no reason. Ugh. Anyways, that's my...
Senseless.
Completely senseless. Just a deadbeat fucking man.
Mm-hmm.
Awful, awful. Anyways.
Well, we have some new patrons.
Awesome.
It's always weird to get into that after talking about really dark, sad stuff. And I need to pull up... We just got a new one, so I don't even know what her state is yet, but she emailed us. So, dun-dun-dun-dun. We have Melissa J. from Indiana. The pins aren't in yet, so.
Okay. I'm just immediately, every yeah, time you I know, say I immediately know. Look at the.
And you're like, has it been done before? So, Melissa, thank you.
Thank you.
And we
you.
Have Christy G. from New York.
Very cool.
That's exciting.
That's very exciting. And also, how many patrons do we have?
99.
Come on, guys. 99.
But almost a big 100.
Almost a big 100.
100. Hundo.
We need to go through and see what states we don't have anyone.
The big ones. The big states.
Yeah.
New Mexico. Colorado. Wyoming. South Dakota.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Almost 100.
Yeah. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you so much.
And we have Mindy C. from Louisiana.
I go and look. Lacey, put the pins in.
Thank you, Mindy.
Yes. Thank you. I hope you guys like our newest patron episode where I ramble endlessly.
I was about to say, you're in luck because our February episode, in my opinion, was really good.
It was great.
Super long, but very interesting. And we also have Bethany P. from Washington. And
still no pins.
Thank you for some West Coast love, because we need to balance out our map a little bit. But yeah, the February episode's up. It's really long. It's really good. We talk about there's zombie ants. There's zombie humans.
There's what Lacey needs LASIK eye surgery during apocalypse. I need tampons. We are not the same.
Yeah, but if you're not a member but want to join so you can listen, head to patreon.com/UnitedStatesOfMurder. We'll also mail you some stickers, of course. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at United States of Murder and on Facebook at US of M Podcast. But yeah, exciting stuff. I'll put those pins in soon, because I hate when they add up, because then I'm on Google Maps just like, okay, where's
this? I'm looking. I'm like, where is this?
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a podcast this morning while I was getting ready for work. It was a zombie apocalypse type episode, which was quite funny. And they were saying that if the zombie apocalypse did break out, that after only, I think they said like 26 days is how short of a period of time that it would take for the entire world to be infected. Like there would be nobody left, that no one would live. And they say that if you live, they estimate that there would only be like 200 people across the whole world.
Wow.
So.
Hmm.
Going along with our Patreon episode.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn, I didn't even touch on any statistics. I was too busy talking about giving you my movie reviews.
I mean, it would spread fast and then.
But then what would you really have to live for? Everybody you knew was gone. And
that's kind of what I think.
Civilization had ceased to exist like you know it. I don't know.
Did you see that there's going to be a follow-up or whatever it's called to The Walking Dead with, what's his name, Rick?
And Michonne.
Called The Ones Who Live or something like that.
I may have to watch it.
I'm like, well, what happened? I didn't even watch to the point where he left the show.
I didn't even know
he was still alive. I thought I just assumed he died.
I didn't either. Maybe I should go back and
it's so long.
But then I'd have to go like all.
I'll just spark note that and then maybe look check this out. I don't know. Because
all
it looks like
back.
It's civilization of some sort. I don't know.
Like they've started rebuilding.
Yeah. I don't know. It's obviously not that far in the future because he's aging in real time or whatever.
Right.
But could be good. I don't know.
How many seasons of that are there? There's like 20.
Too many. I never thought it would end.
I rewatched The Sopranos, and there's only like five or six seasons of that, and it took me forever.
Yeah.
So to start this, whew.
Yeah, that would be a lot. I mean, there's so many episodes where they're just walking through the woods that they need to like list that so you can just skip that.
Skip it. We don't need to see.
I hated those episodes.
Just walking.
They're split up and – one episode is them walking in the woods and blah, blah, blah. Oh, I hated those episodes.
Yeah, those were the worst.
The fillers.
Filler episodes. Speaking of walking through the woods, I went on my Bigfoot hunt this weekend.
Yeah. Tell us about how that went. Did you see the monster?
Didn't.
Okay.
Did not see the monster. But I was telling Lacey just a little 3x5 of it. We drive down to Falk, Arkansas. And go to Monster Mart. I'm totally plugging this place.
Monster Mart.
Monster Mart. It's about 2.5 hours from Little Rock, south, almost to Louisiana. So it's a gas station, and attached to it is a Bigfoot museum, or the Falk Monster. So we get there, we pull up, we're taking all our little quirky kind of pictures outside, and it occurs to us, there are no lights on. There are no cars. So instantly we're like, it's closed. And it was. Even though it says online that it's open, y'all need to fix that, Monster Mart. So we're standing there, just defeat. We are so pissed. We've got up at the ass crack of dawn on Sunday to drive down here, to be here, do the little Tory thing, eat lunch. Drive out to Boggy Creek. Truck pulls up. This old man gets out and he's, you know, hey, how are you guys? And I instantly fly into my Italian mouth and I'm like, well, this place is closed and we just drove 3 hours and wasted our Sunday. And he's like, well, you're in luck. He owns the place. He's like, I'll unlock the door and let you guys in. I'm meeting a camera crew here that are shooting a documentary. So they're going to set up cameras in two different spots on Boggy Creek to see if they catch anything or what they catch. And then pick up the film, go through the footage. Okay. There is basically a Bigfoot festival the end of April that's going to be going on in this small town of Falk, and they're going to show this film this documentary at the festival. So we take 1,000 pictures inside, ask 1,000 questions, talk to the guy, do all the things, buy stickers. I have a Bigfoot air freshener. Our friend Jason buys Bigfoot relish. I mean, it's just, we're buying the most random shit. Jeremy's got a coffee cup. I got Max a grow your own Bigfoot that you set in water and let it soak.
That's amazing.
It's just chaos is ensuing. We're at Wally World, like the movie. We're going around. We're just buying all the things. And then we ask him, can we go down to where Bigfoot has been spotted.
Mm-hmm.
So he gives us this map, circles these areas, and he's telling us how to get there. So I'm thinking, if you give us coordinates, I can just put it in. Because there's no service.
Yeah.
There's not an AT&T tower within 50 miles of this town.
That's scary.
Very, very country.
Mm-hmm.
There's one main road. There's three places and a Dollar General.
There's always a Dollar General.
Yes, it is very in the sticks. So he tells us these directions, circles this map. I have to make a phone call. He says he walks outside. We're still picking up hoodies and looking at stuff, big feet and all the things. He comes back inside. He's like, yeah, you're going to go up here and then you can go to the interstate or you can keep driving until you come to a T, go left. It's going to turn to gravel. Keep going. You're going to pass a church, all the things. And then the creek is down.
That's any place in Arkansas.
So we're like, okay, thank you, sir. So we leave. We're driving. There's no service. We're trying to remember the directions. We hit and I'm like, guys, we just fell for the oldest trick in any scary movie. We think we're smarter and we listen to all these true crime podcasts. We cover all these cases. We watch these shows. Scary movies are our favorite thing ever. And we fell for the oldest trick in the book. Some stranger told us to drive down, go left. He probably went outside to call his friend to run the barbed wire across the road. So we run over it and then we have flats and then they're going to eat us for dinner.
At least it was daytime.
This is true.
But so was Texas Chainsaw Massacre when they got there.
So was Wrong Turn.
Never mind.
They do it in the daylight
too. They do it. Oh, man. So you're alive.
We did survive. We did not see a Bigfoot.
Did you see the creek?
We did. I waded all down and went all into the creek.
I saw you had your boots on. I had the boots on.
I was trying to spot a Bigfoot footprint. Nothing happened. Yeah. So
that's still really cool, though.
It was super fun. This little gas station is the cutest thing ever. Their little Bigfoot museum is really neat. 10 out of 10. You guys should go. It's in Falk, Arkansas.
I mean, man, that's close to Louisiana, Texas, and Oklahoma.
We were 15 miles south of Texarkana.
Wow.
Yeah, so. But it has, once again, I've been bitten by the travel bug. So I have a whole sheet of all these states where I have got on my favorite website, Atlas Obscura.
Ooh.
And it just shows you in each state what random, weird, crazy things
that
you can see. Or this is not an ad, even though Atlas Obscura can sponsor us if you're listening. Also, Road Trippers is another one that I use.
I've used that before to look up random stuff.
Random things along the way. So I have got Missouri, Tennessee, Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and more things in Arkansas that I'm working on.
Very cool.
List. And Jason and Jeremy and I have decided that our next adventure, we are planning a night at the Titan II underground nuclear missile.
Oh, yeah. You've told me about that.
Not far from here. I think it's in Rosebud, but we're going to rent it for the night. It's an Airbnb. It's 35 feet down below ground. It looks like a spaceship. There's control. There's like a whole control booth that has all these, but none of this shit works. You have to take the tour before you stay there. It can only hold six people. So, So Jason, Jeremy, and I each have to pick one person a piece. So six of us can go down there and spend the night.
Oh, wow.
So we're excited about that. I think we're going to do that in April. I was telling them, how crazy would it be if we came out from under the ground the next day and the zombie apocalypse had happened and we were the only three that survived? They're like, stop watching movies, Ashley.
But that's a good place to bunker down.
What? Yeah. Like if there's stormy.
Why not? Yeah.
We're under the ground.
That's very safe.
We're totally fine.
They are safe from tornadoes.
This place looks pretty awesome. You guys should.
It does.
Give it a goo.
There's something, though, that I'm claustrophobic. There's something about being that far down.
It's so big that you wouldn't – I mean, I say that you wouldn't realize. That's why I won't go on a cruise.
Well, see,
at least this I can climb up and get off.
Because I do like cruises and I'm not afraid of airplanes and I'm
– Yeah.
You almost feel like you're not in a small ship in the middle of the earth, but – Not that it's a small ship, but you know what I mean? Relative to the earth is what I meant.
They have like Wi-Fi, all the streaming services, all the things down there.
More Wi-Fi than you just had.
Exactly. So we're excited about that.
Well, that's really cool.
T-shirts. Do you have an update on our t-shirt situation?
We're getting them printed.
When
this comes out, I'll have placed the order. So if you didn't get with us, get with us now and in the future.
Yes.
Maybe we'll do
a new order.
Yeah. It's based on, I think it's our Colorado episode where.
It's like season one.
Yeah. It's an oldie.
It's an oldie.
It's about a rodeo queen. So we'll have pictures too when
they're
we're wearing
so
it.
They're so cute.
Yeah. It's a fun one. And if you like a certain phrase, let us know. Maybe we'll make a sticker of it in the meantime. I did get these made as stickers too.
Awesome.
So whenever they're in.
I want a sticker too.
Eventually those new patrons will get those stickers. And yes, I'll give you one too.
Very awesome. I'm just looking at my notes for housekeeping. I'm not even going to bring up Love is Blind, even though I put this on here because you've already raged earlier.
We'll talk about it for an hour if we talk about Love is Blind. So Love is Blind, season six.
It's on Netflix.
It's a shit show.
Oh my God. Chelsea. Oof. Sorry. She gives me so much anxiety. Just seeing her on my TV, I have secondhand embarrassment. I don't know. I feel like a switch flipped when she came out of the pod. I'm telling you guys, binge this shit. It's.
I will say, I'm not trying to give anything away, that the energy he gives her, I see what how she reacts to it. Kind of because he's. I can't say anything to give it away. But.
And I'm such a dude that I don't necessarily think that he's doing anything wrong.
No, I just.
Don't come for me, Lacey.
Fast forward through a couple of minutes. It's just he's not attracted to her, but he keeps telling her he is.
The body language.
It's almost like
it's a mind
she's
fuck.
Like, what?
Because
he keeps
fuck.
Telling her, I love you. I'm kissing you. Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? So it's like. He needs to just say, I'm not attracted to you.
She's super insecure.
Like, and that's what's making her. But it's making her spiral. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. And he may be attracted to her. Like, they may be popping on all cylinders in you're funny. We get along. We have a great time together. All these things are meshing. But physically, and this happens. I've had this happen before.
And she's pretty.
Have not been.
Mm-hmm. It happens.
Sexually attracted to somebody, but had the best time with them ever. And look forward to spending time with them and want to hang out with them. But
they don't even really look like they're having fun, though.
They really don't.
But the fact that he keeps going... I said I love you more than anyone else said they love their person.
Stop.
I kissed you more than anyone else kissed their person.
You know what's going to happen? Because we haven't seen the final episode that comes out on March the 6th. So we don't know what's going to happen. But I'm going to say it here. They'll end up getting married probably.
No.
I think they will.
What?
I don't know.
You really think so?
I think if they don't, she'll be the one that says no. I don't think he'll be the one that says no.
They'll probably form it in the way where she's first.
Yes.
Or the show will do that.
Yeah.
And I have to just think the reason he's still with her at this point, because he is not interested in, you know what I mean? It's to be on the show longer, right?
Probably. Well, the two new episodes came out today. And
I haven't seen them yet.
I watched them by 11 a.m. I'll just tell you that.
Oh, my God. So, I'm dying. All the guys are a mess.
Oh, God. It's just – I told you earlier, I'm a catch. I don't know what's going on.
I cannot wait until the reunion.
There's none of this drama in my life. It is a lot. This reunion is going to be a lot.
Because stuff has been revealed online now that some of the guys had girlfriends, fiancés.
I've tried so hard not to see any of it. I will shut it down.
TikTok is crazy.
Not been on
TikTok.
Sarah
Ann's TikTok.
Sarah Ann
can
just – You are not a girl's girl. Not a girl's girl.
I do not like Sarah Ann.
I don't like Sarah Ann.
Oh, my.
One of my favorite girls on there, unpopular opinion probably, is Laura. I feel like I relate to her a lot. She's very blunt. She's very honest. She calls you to the carpet immediately. She doesn't let shit by. Men don't like that. Men do not like a woman who is going to hold them accountable and make them man up. They don't.
Yeah.
Some men. Let me preface this by saying some men.
Yeah, of course.
And I think her situation in this show, she has one of those, she has a guppy.
Ugh.
You don't need a guppy.
Yeah.
You need a strong man. And I like her. And I hate the way that
I liked
it's going.
Jeremy in the pods. And then
I
I'm
did
like,
too. Jeremy.
I'm disappointed with Jeremy.
Jeremy, you let us all down. Anyways, we got to stop talking about this.
Yeah.
We're giving so many spoilers. Next week, we're in New Hampshire.
I forgot. I didn't know where we were. I'm excited about that.
New Hampshire.
All right. Bye.
Bye.